Here's part two of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. There are news coverage that it happened, of course. So the first report of JFK assassination from WFAA.
Stretch pants again in the faded soldier blue, which I think is such a stunning combination, and the black boot. I noticed that there are a number of hidden zippers in these jackets. Now, what are these for, Betsy? They can't be for, is it for mad money?
Well, it depends on where they're placed. They can be wherever you want them. For the pockets, so that no snow gets into it, the zipper holding the hood in, because it's easier to put the hood on and off with the zipper than it is with the snaps. Then there's zippers up the side so that the jacket will fit tightly around the hips, keeping that straight, sleek look that it should have. And very often you'll find a zipper hidden in the arm. And
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You'll excuse the fact that I'm out of breath, but about 10 or 15 minutes ago, a tragic thing, from all indications at this point, has happened in the city of Dallas. Let me quote to you this. And you'll excuse me if I am out of breath. A bulletin. This is from the United Press from Dallas. President Kennedy and Governor John Connally have been cut down by assassin's bullets in downtown Dallas. They were riding an open automobile when the shots were fired. The president, his limp body carried in the arms of his wife, Jacqueline, has rushed to Parkland Hospital. And if you'll excuse me, if I give some directions and we talk about what we're going to do here for the next few minutes. But Bobby, let's tape this, if you please, particularly the interview with the eyewitness people. It is being taped good. Here's a piece of copy that was rushed to me and was torn off from the United Press in Dallas. President Kennedy has been shot in Dallas, has been shot in Dallas, Texas. He was shot as a motorcade left downtown Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed the president. She cried out. We're standing on Houston Street between Main and the next street over. Jerry, come in, would you please? And the next street over, we watched the president come by and gave him the applaud that is due the office of the President of the United States. And as he turned left, two or three shots rang out. We thought they were firecrackers until, I thought they did, until the last shot rang out and we heard people screaming. And we rushed over in time to see a policeman standing behind one of the fire poles, looking around as if to, for some place to shoot, someone to shoot at. I'd like to remind you here that as the news comes in to the newsroom, we will be on the air. We'll have our eyewitness people here in just a moment. Vicky, would you see if they need some coffee or something? These people are awfully shaken up. They come awfully close. They were in the line of fire. Jerry?
I remember, Jay, you said, I thought it was, firecracker or something like that. And then they followed one shot, and then a second or two later, another shot, and then another second or
the
two,
third
and then
one.
The third shot. And you said the man's been shot at, and we both turned.
No, I said, my God, that's gunshot.
That's right.
Oh.
And then we turned right over, we were behind the...
Bobby, why don't you just take your shot over there and pan around, and we will walk over and pick up the audio. Let's turn the mic on. I can't hear you, Johnny. What do you want? You want me to move back a little bit? Is it all right now? Ladies and gentlemen, this is the newsroom of our radio and television station. As you can see, most of the boys are out. Bert, let's see. Let's get reorganized here. Grab that cable over there. We're on the air, Bert, and let's talk to you just a minute here. Is this all right? Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce to you the chief cameraman and assistant news director of WFAA television. This is Bert Shipp. Bert, we have brought the people pretty much up to date. Would you tell them exactly what you know as of this point?
Well, Jay, I was standing at the trademark waiting his arrival there. All of a sudden, we saw them approaching. They didn't slow down. As a matter of fact, they were going 70 or 80 miles an hour past us. Everybody was unknowingly, didn't know what happened there at the trademark. And then I jumped in a police car and went to Parkland. When I got there, I found that Nobody knew too much about where he was hit, but they knew that the president was shot in the head. This is what I've been told now, Jay. The president was shot in the head. Connally was shot in the chest. Both of them are still alive when I left the hospital.
Do you have some film?
And yeah, I have film at the hospital.
You get the film and see if you can get it developed real quick.
Yeah,
and
I will.
Put it on the air and
one quote we got out there was Yarbrough said the scene was too gruesome to describe.
I know.
And that's, I've spent most of my time, so I'm getting the film ready now.
Good. Ladies and gentlemen, let me bring you up to date. Jerry Haynes and I were within about 100 yards of where the president was shot. No, they're queuing up the film now that Bert took at Parkland Hospital, as I understand it.
Jay, it's going to start out some brief scenes at the Market Hall, okay, or at Trademark, where the president was due to arrive. It's about probably a mile from the scene of the downtown shooting. And, of course, we had no word at Market Hall as to what went on downtown.
Roll the film.
And it was a complete mystery. The police didn't even know. But we knew, as you'll see by halfway through the film, the police went on past the Market Hall area, or Trademark, rather, and on it to Parkland Hospital.
Bob, whenever you're ready, go ahead and roll. Let's see what we got. Excuse me. No.
Oh, this is a shot. There we go. Here's the Market. There's Market Hall. Trademark is right across the street from there. They had a big welcome sign for the president there at the corner of Industrial and Stemmons. It says, welcome, Jackie. And
now, this was the place where the president was supposed to make his speech.
Here's some a gentleman carrying signs. I guess you'd call them gentlemen. They had these signs. They weren't causing any trouble. They were run off moments after this, told that there was private property and they couldn't be around there. And they wouldn't talk to us other than they said their signs spoke for themselves. There's some of the crowd, 450 extra policemen called on duty. Everybody waited anxiously and waited and waited and waited. There's a policeman ushering a fellow by the name of Joyner from Grand Prairie back across the street. The boys had their mouths taped up so they wouldn't be able to answer any questions. Now, there goes the president on up the hill there. He's been, this is after we found out there was something wrong. And
speeding past.
Yeah, and here's the disappointed crowd left there at the Trademark. I went up on the roadway there to ask some policemen. Here we go to the hospital. There's homicide detectives in front of us. There's Parkland Hospital. There's the entrance. Police cars all over the place. There is Congressman Wright. He's teary-eyed, as you could imagine. And there's the presidential limousine, the Secret Service men shaking it over. There's
Wright again.
Wright and Yarbrough.
Yarbrough.
There's the Secret Service man is taking his type of a mattress or something out of the back of the car there. There's Chief Curry. He just couldn't believe it. He had put everything he had into this visit and gave the men all types of instruction. There's inside of a car. I don't know. Well, that must have been Connally's car. There's some more shots of the everybody waiting expectantly. At this time, no one knew anything. And there goes Ms. Lincoln, the president's press secretary, inside. And there's Yarbrough again, Senator Yarbrough. And he says the sight was too gruesome to describe. And there's a final parting shot from Parkland.
Now we have some more videotape. Let's see what it is.
This is Ed Hogan of WFAA Television in Dallas, Texas. We are standing on the grounds of Parkland Hospital, where President Kennedy was brought just a few hours ago and has died, as most of you have already know. We want to possibly talk to some of the people here who are standing. What is your name, please?
Mrs. Quincy Adams.
Mrs. Quincy, are you from Dallas, Ms. Adams?
Yes.
Memory of the president with a simple inscription.
Bob Walker, WFAA-TV, Dallas, Texas, interrupting. There's been a shooting at Dallas Police Station as Oswald was being transferred. For details, Bill Lord, ABC at City Hall. Bill.
Just 1 minute ago, they were bringing Oswald out. He had apparently changed clothes. He was just going out the door, heading towards the armored car, and there was a bang. We believe it was a shot. And apparently, what has happened to it, we do not know at the present time. A policeman rushed to the scene. attempting to ascertain what had happened. The photographers were taking pictures. Is there someone down on the floor over there?
Yeah, I think that was with Oswald being shot, but I'll get to that later, actually. I'm so sorry. One second. JFK assassination, CBS News coverage as it happened.
And President Kennedy's murder not only marked a turning point for the nation, it was a coming of age for television, including CBS News. We heard Bob Schieffer talk about that. And this is what some of our viewers saw live 50 years ago today.
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
This is Walter Cronkite in our newsroom, and there has been an attempt, as perhaps you know now, on the life of President Kennedy. He was wounded in an automobile driving from Dallas Airport into downtown Dallas, along with Governor Connally of Texas. They've been taken to Parkland Hospital there, where their condition is as yet unknown. We have just learned, however, that Father Huber, one of the two priests called into the room, has administered the last sacrament of the church to President Kennedy. From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
The bulletin is that our correspondent in Dallas, Dan Rather, reports that the Dallas police have arrested a 30-year-old man who was found with a weapon in his possession.
Can you tell me what your first reaction was, ma'am, when you...
The tragedy that ever happened to this country since President Lincoln.
Ma'am?
They didn't...
People will remember today as a date to date things in their lives from, in the same way that they did in the case of President Roosevelt. They say, where were you when President Roosevelt died? They will say the same thing about where were you when you first heard the news of President Kennedy's assassination. This is a scene at Andrews Air Force Base for the casket of carrying the body of President Kennedy is being transferred to an ambulance. Behind it come Mrs. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy.
We'll be quiet now and wait for the new president's word.
We have suffered a loss that cannot be weighed. For me, it is a deep personal tragedy.
Here is the suspect. Will we roll it, please?
Did you shoot the president?
I didn't shoot anybody, no, sir.
Well, you just heard Oswald, who said he did not shoot anybody.
As this day draws to a close, here is a brief summary of its events, past and to follow. Upon today's assassination of President Kennedy, Lyndon B. Johnson became the new president of the United States. This is Harry Reasoner. Good night.
This was a CBS News special report.
And beginning today, CBSNews.com will stream the CBS coverage from November 22nd, 1963, as it aired in real time. And that begins at 1:38 p.m. Eastern and continues over the next 4 days. Incredible.
It'll be an education for a lot of people. CBS News' original coverage of that assassination has been put together in a DVD set. It's also available on demand. It includes Walter Cronkite's investigative reporting on the Warren Commission report. And you can learn more about this by going to cbsthismorning.com.
Oh, boy. I mean, the fact that Oswald lied about killing Kennedy, but he actually did. I mean, there is some conspiracy that... he did kill them, but... He did kill them, but there are other rumors that he did not kill them. And there was, like, a second gunman. But who knows, honestly. All right, Aftermath in Dealey Plaza, the limousine was passing the grassy knoll to the north of Elm Street at the time of the fatal headshots. As the motorcade left Dealey Plaza, police officers and spectators ran up the grassy hill and from the triple underpass to the area behind a 5 foot, 1.5 miles high stocky fence atop the knoll, separating it from the parking lot. No cipher was found there. Lee Bowers was in a two-story railroad switch tower, which gave him an unobstructed view of the rear of the stockade fence atop the grassy knoll. He saw four men between his tower and Elm Street, two men were, who seemed not to know each other near the triple underpass, some 10 to 15 feet apart, and one or two uniformed parking lot attendants. At the time of the shooting, he saw, quote, something out of the ordinary, a sort of milling around, end quote, which he could not identify. Bowers testified that one or both of the men were still there when motorcycle officer Clyde Haygood rode up the grassy knoll to the back of the fence. In a 1966 interview, Bowers clarified that the two men he saw were standing in the opening between the pergola and the fence, and that no one was behind the fence when the shots were fired. Meanwhile, Howard Brennan, Steve Fitzer, who had been sitting across the street from the Texas School Book Depository, approached police to say that as the motorcade passed, he heard a shots come from above, then looked up to see a man with a rifle take another shot from a sixth floor corner window. He said he had seen the same man looking out the window minutes earlier. Police broadcast Brennan's description of this man at 12:45, 12:48, and 12:55 p.m. After the second shot, Brennan recalled, quote, this man was aiming for his last shot. And maybe paused for another second as though to assure himself that he had hit his mark, end quote. As Brennan spoke to the police in front of the building, they were joined by two book depository employees watching the motorcade from windows at the southeast corner of the building's fifth floor. One reported hearing three gunshots directly over their heads and sounds of a bolt-action rifle and cartridges dropping on the floor above. Dallas police sealed off the exits from the depository approximately between 12:33 and 12:50 p.m. At least 104 ear witnesses in Dealey Plaza were on record with an opinion on the direction from which the shots came. 54 or 51.9% thought that all shots came from the depository building. 33 or 31.7% thought they came from either the grassy knoll or the triple underpass. 9 or 8.7% thought each shot came from a location entirely distinct from the knoll or the depository. 5 or 4.8% believe they heard shots from two locations, and 3 or 2.9% thought the shots originated from a direction consistent with the knoll and the depository. The Warren Commission additionally concluded that three shots were fired and said that, quote, a substantial majority of the witnesses stated that the shots were not evenly spaced. Most witnesses recalled that the second and third shots were bunched together, end quote. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby. So, depository employee Buell Wesley Fraser, who drove Oswald to work, testified that he saw Oswald take a long brown paper bag into the building, which Oswald told him contained, quote, certain rods, end quote. After Oswald's supervisor at the depository reported him missing, police broadcast his description as a suspect in the shooting at Dealey Palace. Police officer J.D. Tippett subsequently spotted Oswald walking along a sidewalk in the residential neighborhood of Oak Cliff, 3 miles from Dealey Plaza, and called him over to the patrol car. After an exchange of words, Tippett got out of his car. Oswald shot Tippett 4 times, emptied the bullet castings from his gun, and fled. 6 Dallas police officers also found the long brown bag Fraser described near the sixth floor window where Oswald was determined to have fired gunshots at President Kennedy and was revealed to be 38 inches long with marks on the inside consistent with those of a rifle. Oswald was subsequently seen ducking into the entrance alcove of a store by the store's manager, who then watched Oswald continue up the street and slip into the Texas Theater without paying. The store manager alerted the theater's ticket clerk, who telephoned the police at about 1:40 p.m. Officers arrived and arrested Oswald inside the theater. According to one of the officers, Oswald resisted and attempted to draw his pistol when he was struck and restrained. Oswald was charged with the murders of Kennedy and Tippett later that night. He denied shooting anyone and claimed he was being made a patsy because he lived in the Soviet Union. What the fuck? Then, on Sunday, November 24 at 11:21 a.m. as Oswald was being escorted to a car in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters for the transfer from the city jail to the county jail. He was fatally shot by a Dallas nightclub owner, Jack Ruby. The shooting was broadcast live on American television. Unconsciously, Oswald was taken by ambulance to Parkland Memorial Hospital, where Kennedy had died 2 days earlier. He died at 1:07 p.m. Oswald's death was announced on a TV news broadcast by Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry. An autopsy later that day by Dallas County Medical Examiner Earl Rose found that a gunshot wound to the chest had killed Oswald. Arrested immediately after the shooting, Ruby said that he had been distraught by Kennedy's death and that killing Oswald would spare, quote, Mrs. Kennedy, the discomfiture of coming back to trial, end quote. So if you guys don't know who was Lee Harvey Oswald, I'll tell you, there was like little information about him that I chose specifically for the horror talk. So Oswald was placed in juvenile detention at 12 for truancy. During that time, he was assessed by a psychiatrist as, quote, emotionally disturbed, end quote, due to lack of everyday family life. After attending 12 schools in his youth, he quit repeatedly, and finally, when he was 17, joined the Marines. Several people who knew him described Oswald as withdrawn and temperamental as a child. When Oswald was 12 in August 1952, his mother took him to New York City, where they lived for a short time with Oswald's half-brother John. Oswald and his mother were later asked to leave after an argument in which Oswald allegedly struck his mother and threatened John's wife with a pocket knife. Oh my god. Oswald attended 7th grade in the Bronx, New York, but was often truant, which led to a psychiatric assessment at a juvenile reformatory. The reformatory psychiatrist, Dr. Renata Hartog, described Oswald as immersed in a, quote, vivid fantasy life, turning around the topics of omnipotence and power, through which Oswald tries to compensate for his present shortcomings and frustrations, end quotes. Dr. Hartog concluded, quotes, Lee has to be diagnosed with personality pattern disturbance with schizoid features and passive-aggressive tendencies. Lee has to be seen as an emotionally quite disturbed youngster who suffers under the impact of really existing emotional isolation and deprivation, lack of affection, absence of family life, and rejection by a self-involved and conflicted mother, end quote. Hartog recommended that Lee be placed on a probation on the condition that he seek help and guidance through a child guidance clinic, and that Oswald seek, quote, psychotherapeutic guidance through contact with a family agency, end quote. Evelyn D. Siegel, a social worker who interviewed both Lee and Oswald at Youth House, while describing, quote, a rather pleasant, appealing quality about this emotionally starved, affectionless youngster who grows as no as one speaks to him, end quote, found that he had detached himself from the world around him because, quote, no one in it ever met any of his needs for love, end quote. Hartogs and Siegel indicated that Oswald's mother gave Lee very little affection, with Siegel concluding that Lee, quote, just felt that his mother never gave a damn for him. He always felt like a burden she simply had to tolerate, end quote. Furthermore, his mother did not indicate an awareness of the relationship between her conduct and Lee's psychological problems, with Siegel describing Margaret Oswald as a, quote, defensive, rigid, self-involved person who had real difficulty in accepting and relating to people and who had little understanding, end quote, of Lee's behavior and of the, quote, protective shell he has drawn around himself, end quote. Hartogs reported that she did not understand that Lee's withdrawal was a form of, quote, violent but silent protest against his neglect by her and represents his reaction to a complete absence of any real family life, end quote. When Lee returned to school for the 1953 fall semester, his disciplinary problems continue. When Oswald failed to cooperate with the Swiss school authorities, they sought a court order to remove him from his mother's care so he could be placed into a home for boys to complete his education. This was postponed, perhaps partially because his behavior abruptly improved. That's kind of weird. No offense. Before the New York family court system could address their case, the Oswalds left New York in January 1954 and returned to New Orleans. All right, now back to the horror talk of John F. Kennedy. There's also Lee Harvey Oswald shot on camera. Oh, shit, really? Damn.
Monday, November 25th, 1963. We're originating our program in Washington, where funeral and burial services for John Fitzgerald Kennedy take place today. We'll be on the air for 2.5 hours instead of our customary 2 hours. And with me in the NBC Washington studios is our Washington correspondent, Martin Nagronsky. Yesterday began on a numbing note of horror with millions of Americans as spectators. It built to a moment of intense grief and heart-tugging emotion and continued on a high emotional note throughout the evening and the morning hours of today, Monday. It began with the fatal shooting of Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin of John Kennedy, by Jack Ruby, a Dallas nightclub owner, in the basement of Dallas police headquarters. Here's how it looked and sounded on live nationwide television. The voice is that of NBC reporter Tom Pettit.
There is Lee
Oswald. Ooh!
He's been shot. He's been shot.
Who's he going to tell him on?
There is Lee Oswald.
Oh, wow, that's crazy. I can't believe it was literally live on camera. Like, it's crazy. The comments, one of them says, "I'm just impressed that the cameraman held the camera that long without panicking." Damn, okay, I hope it was a lot. What the fuck? Another quote, "Ruby is not a hero, folks. He absolutely destroyed any chance of understanding how and why Kennedy died exactly." Good points.
He's been shot. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's the man with a gun. It's absolute panic here in the basement of Dallas police headquarters. Detectives have their guns drawn. Oswald has been shot. There is no question about it. Oswald has been shot.
This remarkable photograph by Bob Jackson of the Dallas Times-Herald was taken a split second after the shot. Oswald, his face contorted, slumped to the floor. He was sped to the same hospital where President Kennedy died. Here's the shooting again in slow motion. Ruby, a well-known police character, burst from the crowd of newsmen and policemen and fired a single bullet at point-blank range into Oswald. Ruby was quickly subdued and later charged with murder. This after Oswald died at the hospital without regaining consciousness. Meanwhile, here in Washington, the high drama of the day had begun. A wheeled caisson, drawn by 6 matched grays, arrived at the north portico of the White House shortly before 1 p.m. There was a 7th horse, a black riderless stallion with reversed boots in the stirrups, symbolic of the dead commander-in-chief. A few minutes after 1 o'clock, with Washington bathed in the light of a cold winter sun, uniformed pallbearers from all of the armed services walked slowly from the White House with the casket containing the body of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. The military honor guard snapped to present arms. Civilians bared their heads. Then came Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy, pale but composed, holding the hands of daughter Caroline and son John Jr. As the casket was placed atop the caisson, Mrs. Kennedy stared fixedly ahead. She stopped to quiet Caroline and young John, who seemed thankfully unaware of what was happening.
Oh, because they were little at the time.
To the mournful rattle of muffled drums, the cortege began its slow march out of the White House grounds, onto Pennsylvania Avenue and thence to the Capitol, a mile distant. The cadence was a steady 100 steps to the minute. Ahead of the caisson marched the drummers, 3 clergymen, a color guard, and a detachment of sailors. And flanking the flag-draped casket was an honor guard from all the armed services, Marines, soldiers, airmen, Coast Guardsmen and sailors, always the sound of drums. along Constitution Avenue to the Capitol.
I'm going to do the next part. One second.